Collective memories are always being formed in the present. The official versions become history, or at least the official history. And the struggle to control history and the shape our memory takes is a constant project of states and political powers. The destruction of cultural memories is one tool of political domination, and the creation of national myths is another. We often hear that if we forget history, we're doomed to repeat it, but we may also need to uncover and remember our real histories to act from that knowledge. Howard Zinn is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Boston University. He is the author of A People's History of the United States, Howard Zinn on History, You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, and many other books. He's been a leader and inspiration to generations of activists on issues from the civil rights movement to Vietnam to Iraq. Last month, he published a commentary in The Progressive on the third anniversary of the invasion of Iraq called Lessons of the Iraq War Start with U.S. History. Howard Zinn joins me now by phone. Hello, Howard.
Oh, hello.
You say in your recent article that one of the reasons that Americans have not understood the agenda of war making on Iraq is a lack of historical perspective, and you detail a long list of historical myths shaped by American presidents. Are those accounts outright lies, or are they simply a different political perspective?
Well, to say they're a different political perspective gives it a kind of benign look, as if, well, we just have two people or two groups who disagree about this issue. No, I think the problem is deeper than that. The problem is that there are different interests involved, that the government has a different interest than the people. And therefore, the government will act in a way that is not in the best interests of the people, and if you don't know history, you will not know that. That is, if you don't have any history of government policy, then you will believe what the people in authority tell you. And if you know some of that history, and I don't mean orthodox history, I don't mean traditional history, I don't mean nationalist history, I don't mean the history that simply glorifies what the country does, and of course a lot of history does that. If you have a kind of critical and independent history, you will understand that the government lies, the government deceives, and the government, because it does have different interests, will try to persuade the American people, and I don't doubt this is true of other governments, too, but I happen to be living in the United States, and so I'm concentrating on this government, and also because this government happens to be the most powerful government in the world, and therefore what it does has very dangerous consequences for the people. But if you know the history of government deception, if you know how many times the people in authority, the president and other people there in political power, have said, oh, we must go to war to bring liberty, democracy to these people, to bring civilization, Christianity to these people, if you know how many times that had been said and how often that proved to be a deception, and that the actual motives of the American government were not to bring liberty or democracy. Motives were the motives of most governments, and certainly of imperial governments, motives of power and economic profit. I think history is very useful in understanding that.
You quote Henry Kissinger in The People's History of the United States, and he said, history is the memory of the state. How does your perspective as a historian differ from Kissinger's?
Yeah, it's very interesting that he should say that. I'm not surprised that he should say that, because it's a very Machiavellian statement. I mean, Machiavelli, back in the 16th century, just looked at everything from the viewpoint of the prince, from the viewpoint of the ruler. And the question, what is in the ruler's interest? And so when Kissinger said history is the memory of states, well, that means what he's concerned with is state power, just as Machiavelli was. And it means that when Kissinger looks at history, he's concerned with what happened to states. That's why he can say, as he did, that the period between 1815, the Congress of Vienna in Europe, and 1914, that 100-year period, was a period of peace. From the standpoint of the governments, it was a period of peace. There was no world war. From the standpoint of all the people in the world who were the victims of Western imperialism during that 100 years, the people in Asia, the people in the Middle East, the people in Latin America, from their point of view, this was not a peaceful period at all, but a period of violence and exploitation.
So if at the time that events are unfolding, we're faced with a distorted view by politicians, how can we hope to establish for the future an accurate collective memory of events in our history?
Well, it's not easy, because the means of communication and the institutions of culture, the publishing industry, the textbooks, the newspapers, certainly the television programs, are controlled to a very large extent by powerful and wealthy corporations. And they are not looking kindly on interpretations of history or on historical fact, which brings the public in opposition to the government or in opposition to corporate power. So it's not easy to get accurate historical information to the public, but it's not impossible. It's possible when, for instance, teachers are bold and they don't follow the regular curriculum, and they bring into the classroom materials, reading materials, and ideas which the students will not get from the orthodox textbooks. So good teachers, independent, risk-taking, bold teachers are one of the answers to the usual distorted history. Another answer is the independent media, the small newspapers, the community newspapers, the community radio stations, so that people who tune in on the radio don't have to simply depend on ABC and CBS on the major networks. People who tune in on television don't have to simply depend on the major television stations. I don't know how much you get there in your area, but here in the United States you can get Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, you can get Pacifica Radio, you can get David Barsamian's Alternative Radio. So there are ways to bring important information to the public. But as I say, it's not easy. It's kind of waging a guerrilla warfare with the establishment, which controls so much of our culture.
There are certain memories, and I say memories in quotes, that are used to manipulate public opinion. For example, there's the story that American soldiers returning from Vietnam were spat on at the San Francisco airport, and that's an often repeated story that was recently exposed as a myth in the anti-war film Sir, No Sir. How common is that type of historical distortion?
Yeah, well, it's very common, and in fact, it's an example of how the press is manipulated and controlled so as to spread information which is false. And I mean, that's a good example of it, and it kept being repeated again and again. Our soldiers were spat upon, and this sociologist, who himself was a Vietnam veteran, decided to follow up on these all of these statements and trace them to their sources, and he found there was just no truth to this. I, as a member of the anti-war movement, can testify, and I was in the anti-war movement from beginning to end, and countless demonstrations, and I never heard anybody in the anti-war movement insult a GI or blame the GIs for the disaster of Vietnam. In fact, it was the GIs who came back from Vietnam and formed Vietnam Veterans Against the War and became an important part of the anti-war movement. So there was an alliance between the civilians who were against the war and the Vietnam veterans who were against the war. But the government managed to maintain that myth, and the newspapers, the press, collaborated with that myth, you know, for a long time.
Working to uncover and bring light to collective memories has been an aspect of many social struggles, from Indigenous people's struggles to the civil rights movement and the women's movement. What's the usefulness of this kind of recovery of a forgotten past to people who are working for social change?
Well, I think the usefulness of recovering the hidden history of the people is, well, I think at least twofold. One is to expose the people and interests who have dominated our history and dominated our lives. That is, to expose the actions of government, to expose the actions of these powerful corporations, to expose, for instance, the foreign policy of the United States. That's one very, very important function of a different kind of history. The other function is to present the history of social movements and show how these social movements have played an important part in rectifying injustices, to show that when injustices have been remedied, they have not been remedied by the government. They certainly have not been remedied by the powerful corporate heads. They've been remedied by ordinary people who got together, organized, protested, often broke the law, committed acts of civil disobedience, and built movements that were strong enough to force the government to change policy. I mean, there are examples of this in history, and it's very important to bring out those examples to show people that they are not simply helpless and passive victims of what the powerful interests do, but they can actually change history. For instance, the history of the labor movement. After all, the eight-hour day was not won by Congress passing a law or the president issuing an edict. Certainly was not won by the voluntary charitable nature of corporations. The eight-hour day was won by workers who went out on strike, who risked their jobs, who faced the police and the National Guard, and they succeeded in winning the eight-hour day. And working conditions are not changed from above, they're changed from below by the workers themselves. Similarly, certainly the history of black people in this country shows, and that's why this history is so important. If you look at that history and you see that it wasn't simply that Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, it was that the slaves themselves, the ex-slaves, the abolitionists, and with white allies, formed an enormous movement against slavery, which pushed Lincoln and pushed Congress into first the Emancipation Proclamation, then the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments. And we've seen this more recently. To tell the history, for instance, of the 60s, to tell the history of the civil rights movement, of the women's movement, of the, recently of the gay and lesbian movement, of the environmental movement, if you tell that history, then you show people that they have a power of their own that at certain times governments cannot suppress. In other words, you give people a sense of their own ability to change history.
You wrote in 1999 about the dangers of encircling a collective memory with barbed wire, specifically the memory of the Jewish Holocaust. Can you explain what you see as the problem with isolating a singular chapter of history?
Well, the problem with doing that is that you lose a certain kind of perspective, and people become obsessed with what happened to them and forget of what happened to others. I mean the Holocaust is an example, and that is, you know, there are people who see the Holocaust as the center and the circumference of history. And of course, this Holocaust was a very terrible moment in modern world history. But if you paid only attention to that, you know, then you might think that, well, only the Jews have suffered. But the fact is that many other people have suffered. Millions of people were killed by Hitler who were not Jews. They were radicals, or they were homosexuals, or they were gypsies. And then, you know, we have had atrocities committed in our time, and the Holocaust takes its place among these various atrocities. If you only concentrated on one set of atrocities and ignored the others, you would have a very limited view of the world.
You also speak of memories that need to be faced, memories of American injustice at home and abroad. What good can come as a result of facing up to that history?
Well, I think the good that can come of it is to give people a certain degree of self-respect, to make them feel that they're not simply victims of whoever is in power, that their job as citizens is not simply to go to the polls every 4 years or every 2 years and vote for one or another candidate, neither of whom may be satisfying to this citizen, but their job as citizen is an everyday job, not just a once in 4 years job. That's the important thing for people to learn, that they must become part of a social struggle. They must join with other people, that they cannot depend on the government, that they can depend only on themselves and their brothers and sisters. And that is how changes have taken place in history, whenever injustices have been remedied.
Well, thank you, Howard, for sharing your thoughts with us.
Oh, well, thank you. A pleasure talking with you.
I've been speaking with Howard Zinn. He is a playwright, historian, and activist, and is the author of A People's History of the United States and many other books. You can read his recent article called Lessons of Iraq War Start with U.S. History on the Progressive website. You can go to Red Eye's website at coopradio.org/redeye for a direct link.